we left off yesterday, we were trying really just to put together the final touches on this sugya. Just, one second. We were trying to put together the final touches on the sugya in terms of how do we pass in halacha in terms of earrings. So we, of course, we spoke at great length already about the three different opinions and we've shown him as to what earring can and cannot do. So according to the most extreme view of the Rashbam, earring doesn't really know anything. Earring is literally klisheni. According to the other extreme, as it tells in Zvachim, earring is mabasha, literally like the klirishon. It's literally the same as putting food into a pot. And Rabbi Tam was the middle view that it's mabasha for the klipa. Cooks the outermost part of the food, which of course, even if that would be true, that would pose a serious problem in terms of the Shabbos. How do we pass in Halacha? So we saw the end of the issue yesterday. The Shulchan Aruch says explicitly you're not allowed to pour water onto tafel and onto spices that what you cook. So that's an issur gomur to pour from water onto those spices. And the Magen Avraham explained that if a person does it, so that even at the end, we are going to have a problem because we really follow. To really follow the view of Rabbeinu Tam. That's the middle of the government, that's the final acceptance view. Says the Magen Avraham, like Rabbeinu Tam, the middle view, that it's the Bashan of the Klipa. Therefore, even the Abbot would pose a problem. So, at the very end of the Shia, we pose a challenge to the Magen Avraham. We take a look again at the 17th in the Maamar Kamos, where the Magen Avraham, in a different context, in Siman Shem Chav Gimel, writes, We have Shadesh Mahaka Badi Abbot, We have Shadesh Matir Lechan Chila. That the whole prohibition of no prohibition of eating something that was cooked on Shabbos is not an issur d'oraisa. It's only a knas, it's only a penalty mid rabbanon. And that penalty was only instituted when something was really, really awesome to do with chila. If my mom took a piece of raw chicken and cooked on Shabbos, I shouldn't eat that chicken on Shabbos. If I did something that's a shayla, that's a machlek, is a suffering, two different opinions, five different shita. So as long as there are some shitas that permit doing something as a chila, so with the yabba we're going to be making. So we raised the question, according to the Magen Avraham, in the case of Iroi, there are shitas that permit it. It was a Rashbam. Rashbam says that it's mutter. So why can't we not necessarily rely on the Rashbam chila to do it, but at least with the yabba, why can't we rely on the view of So we mentioned towards the end of the show yesterday that this idea that sometimes we almost like revive shitas that have been not really accepted in halacha, we have such an idea in other areas of halacha, and we have to be very, very careful at what point we say that a shita can still be revived and relied upon under certain circumstances, and at what point we say that a shita has just been rejected, the shita is just not accepted at all, and we can't even negotiate, can't even discuss it. So we quoted the Gemara that is needed, it says that and the shita was nimna begamra. It was an official vote that was taken, and we don't paskin like plainly. This time the shita was outvoted by the Beis Din, so then that shita could no longer be revived, even b'shas and chaf, and b'diab, etc. Whereas if the shita has not been absolutely rejected, so then we can still discuss it. So the Chazanish said that the view of the Rashbam has basically been rejected. We have three shitas in Rishonim, the Tam, places in the Rashbam, and the Rashbam was almost like Nini Vagom against it. We don't accept the Rashbam at all. We don't consider it to be even a suffix, and therefore it's not a suffix, so you can't rely on even the Yavid, which is again a little hard to understand, because we generally don't have our voting shitas, we don't have a base on today, we don't have a heaven today. So the only way that shitas almost get like rejected is, I guess, over time. Like certain shitas that may have been viable at some time in history, but as time goes on, it becomes so overwhelmingly minority view, becomes so the middle class, so it becomes so precarious in the other direction. So certain shitas almost get put on the back burner, literally take it off the radar screen, the gathering. So it's very hard to know when does that happen, when does that not happen. I wasn't the only one who said it. The Rashbam said it. But again, it seems to me that the Magen Avraham is just completely rejecting the shita to such an extent that even the Eved are not going to rely on it. So that approach is difficult, if it is likely to take, because there's another Magen Avraham, nothing but the Shabbos, come to Enoch's Brachas of all places, that seems to actually give a lot of credibility to Rashbam. He doesn't ignore the Rashbam entirely. He takes the Rashbam very seriously, which almost just straightens the question if in other areas of halacha, we're not completely ignoring the Rashbam, so then why can't we rely on him? Why can't we say that, okay, I did something wrong, I shouldn't have poured that water onto the spices, but the spices did it already. So why be the evidence? Are we so worried not to like even eat the spices or have the food afterwards? Why are we so convinced the Rashbam has been rejected? So the context for the Magen Avraham himself actually brings the Rashbam into the picture in halacha. Is again not Hilchos Shabbos at all. It's Hilchos Brachos, but as we've seen from this sugya, but the other sugya is halacha is so interwoven with one another that any shadi paskei Hilchos Shabbos, these initials get impacted on other areas of halacha as well. So let's take a look back a little bit to the 13th Gemara Mekomos, to a statement in Shulchan Aruch that will set the stage for a Magen Avraham's comment in Hilchos Brachos, which is only going to highlight our difficulty in do we really truly reject the Rashbam's theory or not. So Shulchan Aruch is basing himself off a sugya in the sixth Berach HaMaseches Brachos about different things that can happen to a piece of bread that could potentially remove the ability to recite about sin. Now, obviously, if bread starts off flour, water, thrown into an oven, gets up a challah roll, so then nobody argues, of course you make about sin on that. But there may be some processes that could happen along the line afterwards, after the baking is complete, after the bread is considered to be bread. Can anything happen afterwards that could be mevatel, that can negate the shem lechem, and can in a sense make this bread revert back to mezonos? It's going to be because it's flour, as flour, and so anything's going to be mezonos. But what, if anything, could happen to bread to make it lose the status of bread? So the Shulchan Aruch quotes a somewhat complicated sugi from the seven brachos. Actually, the language Rashi and Tosfos, but halacha we follow the view of Tosfos about that there are really three different categories as to what can and cannot happen to something and potentially changing its bracha. So take a look at the Shulchan Aruch on the 13th of the Mamagom. It's chavitza. Behind the perui lechem shenidbakim yachad de marak, you have pieces of bread, small pieces of bread that are now clumped together, that are being connected together through some kind of a soup, or some sort of honey or soup, some kind of a liquid that's being used to connect the piece of bread, again, to make a different kind of a dish out of it. So in this bashel, if it was subsequently cooked, so you took small pieces of bread and you stuck them together using some kind of a liquid, and now you subsequently cook it. So I think probably the best example we can give would be a matzah ball kneaded. So in Canadian is you take small pieces of bread, matzah, the same as bread, you take very, very small pieces of bread, take matzah meal, take small pieces, pirure matzah, and you stick them together with eggs, oil, and I'm not sure how to make matzah balls, and then you cook them, you throw them to a pot. So what's the thing? So do you make hamotzei matzah balls and Canadian chana? So in yesh bem kizayis, afa bisha able to alechem avach hamotzei berse matzah. So it says the Shulchan Aruch, quoting from the Tosfos, quoting from the Gemara, that the only thing that matters is each piece of kezias, and I don't mean is the entire kneidel of kezias, I mean was each individual piece of matzah that was stuck together kezias, and the answer is, if it was, you could have a matzah ball the size of the grapes in Morocco, you know, a pretty, pretty big ball over there. So obviously any given kneidel, the individual piece of matzah ball was significantly less than a kezias. Says the Shulchan Aruch, then the game's over. Then if Yesh from Kizayis, Mevarach Hamotzei Berse Matzah, and Eivam Kizayis, Alpha Bishanir Boto Olechem, even though it may look to you like it's still bread, it's still matzah, Eivam Mevarach Hamotzei Berse Matzah, the bracha has been chosen, the bracha goes down. So this is basically the rule of Lechem Shemiz Bashel, take a piece of bread, and if the pieces were very, very small, less than a Kizayis, then the bracha goes down. But what if Eivam Mevushel? What if I didn't subsequently cook it? It was just reconnected. I took little pieces of matzah, little pieces of bread, and I just connected them together with some other kinds of sticky foods, but I didn't actually recook it. So let's give an example of that. That's what we call like a challah kugel, or a matzah kugel or something. I take small pieces of matzah, small pieces of bread, and I stick them together, and I put them in the oven. I don't put them into a pot of water. I put them into the oven, so I was never mevashel them together. Then the rule is a little bit different. In the Asian person's kezias, so if the pieces are a kezias, like we said before, then for sure you're going to make a motzi on it. Here's where the din changes between whether it was subsequently cooked or not. In the Eibem kezias, if the pieces do not have a kezias, in the Asian toyer lechem, if they look like bread, you take a look at it and say, this is a piece of bread, this is a piece of matzah, then you make hamotzi and you wash and you bench on them. let's say, for example, my wife makes this little tabei stuff. It's like matzah kind of kugels. So you take a piece, take a piece of matzah farfel, and you mix them with oil and other things, and you bake them. You don't cook them. You bake them. What bracha do you make on them? So you have to look at it and see, can I see the piece of matzah? And at least the ones that my wife said, yeah, you can do matzah. I can look at it. I can tell you this matzah farfel. Each piece of matzah farfel is still distinct. So if that's the case, then you have to wash and bench on them. Even though the pieces are less than a kizayis, it doesn't matter since they were never subsequently cooked. So you see that subsequently cooking is a whole other ballgame. Subsequently cooked, then it all depends on kizayis, no kizayis. If it wasn't subsequently cooked, even if it's less than a kizayis, if it still has suras alechem, suras apas, tor alechem, you have to wash and bench. Amen tor alechem, oh, it's less than a kizayis, it doesn't look like bread anyway. But if ain alam avushal, velo mechubah, what if it's neither of the two categories? It was never recooked over, and it was never even mushed together with other things. Elamafura, it was just simply broken down into little pieces. You want to sit down and eat a box of matzah meal. What's the din? Even though you look at this matzah meal, I cannot tell whether it's matzah meal, whether it's potato starch, whether it's almond flour. I have no idea what it is. And each piece of matzah meal is obviously significantly less than a kizayis. The varach of hamotzi b'tzimtzum. You wash and bench hamotzi b'tzimtzum. It's bread. Nothing's happened. Just because you take a piece of bread and break it into little pieces, that doesn't change the status of bread. So those are the three dinim b'shulchan. This is true, by the way, for response as well. It's like a person has trouble chewing a big piece of matzah. So the ikra din, they can eat a kizayis of matzah meal. It has to be shmur matzah meal, they can eat a kizayis of a matzah meal. It said over that the Brisker Rav, towards the end of his life, he had a certain condition. It was very, very hard for him to eat. And they say that, again, I don't know how many years, but towards the end of his life, so his last Pesach, so that's how you would eat a kizayis matzah. Literally spoonfuls of matzah meal, because that's a different of Shulchan Aruch that it hasn't changed. What changed? Nothing changed. This guy. What's the difference between a big piece of matzah, a medium piece of matzah, and a tiny teeny piece of matzah? So only eating kizayis, but it's okay. But if you do change it and you start to either cook it or you start to mix it with other things, then the red flags go up. Then you have a question. So it's clear from this halacha that there is a distinction between food that was subsequently cooked versus not cooked. Now, of course, the million-dollar question we're asking is, how do you define cooked? So comes the Magen Avraham, of all places, the Magen Avraham, who we've been talking about for the last day, the 14th of the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham says this follows. What does the special mean? Says the Magen Avraham, that means you took the piece of bread and you put it into a pot. It's a klirishon, that's called the special. And then everything depends on kizayis. Aval says a little bit. Here's a tricky part. If you niyach ha-pirurim b'kara, you simply took the crumbs and you put it into a bowl. The ira le'roscha, now you pour boiling water on it. Lo mikra nizbasha. We're not so sure that that's called nizbasha. We don't know. We're not sure. Why are we not sure then? Nira li be'acha sheish machlekes b'yardem, ira nizbasha b'klevishon. Because we don't know where the ira is nizbasha. What don't we know? Rashbam, Rabbi Natan, the Tazim Zvachim. We're not sure. We're not 100% sure. Is that called bishul? Now we're in a pickle because if you did that, you took boiling water and you poured it onto small pieces of matzah, small pieces of bread. I don't know yet what the din is. If you hold that Iri is Mavashel, then you wouldn't make a motzi because you had small pieces that were cooked. And all that matters is less than a kizayis. But if you hold that Iri is not Mavashel, so then it doesn't matter that the small pieces, if you can still see they have tzuras alechem, tzuras apas, then you have to make a motzi on it. So since we don't know, says the Magen Avraham, how we hold that Iroi, so therefore we should play it safe with his brachas. L'chein yesh l'noah shelo lechol peirurin she'ira lemichlevishim. V'nir she'esh b'tzai alechem. Says we should be weary, we should be careful, not so fast, not so poshut. Maybe we should have eaten these small pieces of bread that were poured on them from a klevishim. Because according to those Rishonim who say that's called cooked, then you just make mitzvahs. But according to those Rishonim who say it's not called cooked, who is that Rishon who says not called cooked? Rishon, since it's not called cooked, v'nir sheish b'tzai lechem, kol shekein k'shochel harbe asher sofik b'menu, havei sofik derais, havei v'rach b'zavaz l'chein, v'rach b'pasach etchila. Says the Magen Avraham, we don't know what the din is. Don't get involved in shilas figures, the rice, the bench, eat all the bread. Listen, the Magen Avraham is saying that we don't know the din, but the Rabbi Chashav told us exactly what the din was. The Rabbi Chashav said, the din is so partial, that we shouldn't be cooking from a Kli Rishon, but I'm doing Iru from a Kli Rishon, then even B'diyat the Magen Asura. So I understand the Nuchah Shabbos why the Magen Avraham wanted to be Machmir. I totally understand why the Magen Avraham is not advocating pouring hot water onto raw foods of Shabbos. I totally agree to that because we don't know what the din is. But the fact that the Magen Avraham is saying that we're so sure the din, we're 1,000% convinced that the Rishbam is absolutely completely rejected. I don't know. The Magen Avraham's brothers didn't seem to be so sure about that. So I'm not sure. Because I'm not sure. I'm not sure anymore. But I'm willing to kind of say that I don't know what the din is. I'm not 100% sure. I'm not going to be knowing the cooler like the Rishbam. On the other hand, I'm not going to reject the Rishbam. And if I'm not going to reject the Rishbam entirely, so then maybe the Yemen, I could still salvage any food that was prepared using the Rishbam's standards. So, have to be, give a disclaimer. I have almost like a personal idea in this. I'll tell you what my personal idea is. Because the story that happened, I've told the story over in other contexts as well. The story goes back a little bit more than 30 years ago already. It was one of my kufas when I was learning in Kerem Yavne. It was actually Pasha, it was Shabbos Nachamu. Now that I remember, I think it was definitely for Shabbos Nachamu. 33 years ago, give or take, something like that. 33 years ago, Shabbos Nachamu. I was, yeshiva just ended, and I went away for friends of mine, for Shabbos, people I knew from Riverdale at the time. I was staying with them for Shabbos. And following Shabbos happened on Shabbos, that the father of the family had asked one of the daughters to make him a cup of tea, and he had assumed that she was going to make it, whether it was Klerishi, Klerishi, Tisens, we'll talk about that in a moment, but he assumed whatever, she's going to make tea, like supposed to be make tea properly, and I don't know, was confused, she was a young girl, like a teenager, she didn't really understand what was going on, and she went ahead, she took a tea bag, and she went over to the, I don't even think they had urns, but the tea can, whatever it was, and poured hot water onto the tea bag and brought him a cup of tea. So he said, wait a second. This tea was just made just like you did. He's right. The tea should not have been made that way. According to Rabbeinu Tam, it was a very, very simple shayla. According to Rabbeinu Tam, it was mabashim with the klipa, and that's a problem in the Torah. When it goes in Zvachim, it's mabashim with kulot, it's a sure problem in the Torah. The only opinion that would have permitted this tea would have been the Rashbam. So he asked me, at the time again, I was just learning Kerem Yavne, and things the Talmud. He asked me, what do I think? Do I think that you can even drink the tea with the Yavet? So I responded as follows. I was aware of the Magen Avraham at Simen Shimchav Gimel, but I wasn't aware of the Magen Avraham at Shirin Ches. So I responded, I think the din is that whenever there's a machloik is about whether you're allowed to do something with Chachila, whenever there's a viable sheet that says that it's okay, so I said, I think that with the Yavet, you're allowed to rely on that sheet. So I said to him, I learned the Taisus, I knew the Taisus from the Sech HaShabbos, but the Rishbam. So I said to him, I know that the Rishbam holds that it's mutter, and even though Rabbeinu Tam disagrees, and probably most of the Rishbam disagree, and we don't really know the Rishbam, but I think it's okay to drink the tea. That's what I told him 30 plus years ago. So I remember his Loshan on the Yemizah, he said to me, I don't want to live my life with the Yemizah. I said, I want to live my life with the Yemizah. And he threw out the tea. So whether he was required to do so or not, I can't tell you. So years later, I had Chalisha Sadas. I felt bad that I'd given that psak because then I heard about the Chazanish. I heard about this Magen Avraham, the Chazanish, who says that you're not supposed to rely on the Rishbam. Even with the Eved, you shouldn't rely on the Rishbam. So I felt like I'd given the wrong psak. I didn't feel too bad because I didn't rely on the psak anyway. But then years after that, I heard another question that says maybe we don't follow the Chazanish. Maybe the Rishbam Shita is still a viable Shita, like the Magen Avraham himself in the Chazanish seems to indicate. So again, I'm not losing too much sleep 30 plus years later, Shabbos Nachamu, over that particular Maisa. But the Maisa did have an interesting postscript to it. It just shows us how careful we have to be. The things that we say can sometimes come back to us many, many years later. Bein L'Tov, Bein L'Ra. So in this case, actually, was L'Tov. This was years, years later. Somebody called me, asking me as a reference for a shidduch for that particular family. Or another, not for the daughter who had made the tea, for a younger child. They called me and asked me about, they knew I knew the family from Riverdale, they asked me about that family. They said, listen, you know, I know the family so well, you know, I'm friendly enough, they invited me to come for Shabbos, I'm the best friends with them. I said, but I just want to share with you one story just to give you an indication about the real, you know, to Mr. Yerushalayim in the family. So I told them all the story about the tea. I said, and I remember the lashon. It was already must have been a good 10, 15 years later when they called me about the shidduch reference. So I said that I can just tell you that there's a family that their motto is we want to live our lives l'chachila, not for the yavid. So again, you can do whatever you want. But I have no idea whether that shidduch went through. I think all the kids are subsequently married. I don't know if it was that shidduch or another shidduch, but that was their motto. That's how they live their lives. So a cup of tikkun sometimes get you a shidduch. You never know what's going to happen, but. I'm still not sure what the psach is. I don't know. I'm not sure what the din is. I don't know whether we have to be chayish at least with the yemen, even with the yemen. Again, fresh baba. Maybe we have a right to be making with the yemen. Magarav is machko. We didn't quite understand. Magarav had this machko. We're not quite sure. Again, different opinions about it with the yemen. I guess it was safer for the thing. So let's just almost like summarize what we have in terms of, because we've been talking a lot about Eroy. We talked a lot about klisheni, some things. And because we mentioned, if we go back for a second to the 15th of the Maamar Kamos, where the Shulchan Aruch said explicitly, also we can tavlin b'kar v'arslan b'kli rishon, let's just recap for a moment how this plays out for us. Because the best example is the cup of tea. So if you follow everything we've been saying, and you're basically treating tea as a raw food, which is tea makes it not really cooked beforehand. So you're treating either, you know, the raw tea leaves, or today they just put into a tea bag. You treat that as raw food, so then the chur should be a no-brainer that to take a tea bag and put it into a pot of water, that's like totally out of the question. If the pot of water is on the fire, then obviously that's bishul government at Torah. Even if the pot of water is off the fire, it's bishul in a klirisha, which is clearly prohibited. According to one opinion, maybe it's only derabbanan. We spoke a lot about Rishami in days gone by. But it doesn't matter, but there's no question that to make tea in a Kli Rishon Mamish is out of the question. What about to pour water from a Kli Rishon onto tea bags? That's for sure also. I shouldn't say for sure, the Shabbat is not. But again, nobody really paskins, even among the Rav, nobody would paskin the Chachil like the Shabbat today. So under no circumstances should one be pouring water onto a tea bag. So that means you can't take water from a tea kettle, you can't take water from an urn. Urn, we assume, is at least a Kli Rishon, there's a heating element inside. So that's like a no-brainer. To pour water onto a tea bag directly is out of the question. However, what about to pour the water into a cup and then put the tea bag into the cup? So what would our take be on that? So that gets much much grayer area, because that already opens up the question of a klisheni. So now, what's that take on klisheni? I'm pouring the water directly from the tea kettle into the cup, and then it's boiling hot water. Taking a tea bag, raw tea leaves, is there putting it inside a klisheni? Is that okay or not? So that's a throwback to what we spoke about in previous sugyas. So the Gemara says, klisheni and mevasha, don't worry about it, nothing happens to klisheni, everything's hunky dory, everything's great. Three reasons why we would shy away from a klisheni. Number one, a potentially very serious issue of Kali HaMishnah. That was the Mishnah we spoke about several times. And the Mishnah says that when you have very, very easily, lightly kind of cooked foods, you have these little fish, little soft kinds of foods that are very, very easily cooked. The thing is that these kinds of foods could potentially be subject to an issur bishul, even in a klisheni. Now, truth be told, we're not quite sure what foods are kalei bishul, what foods are not kalei bishul, but we have to be wary about it. And that's what the Sefer Yireyim, the Talmud Rabbi Tam said, that we don't really know what is kalei bishul, what's not. So therefore, we have to assume it's kalei bishul to prove it otherwise. So when we look at a tea bag, we probably have to take the attitude, this is kalei bishul, or the sofa kalei bishul, we don't really know. And therefore, we shouldn't be running to put a tea bag into a klisheni. There's another reason why we shouldn't be running to put a tea bag into a klisheni, because as we learned in the Sugya, Tosfos taught us that according to many opinions, there's a derabbanan cooking in a klisheni called mechzikim avasha. So even those foods that are not quite kalei bishul, anyway, lemaisa should not be put into klishenis, because klishenis are just bad. Klishenis are problematic, either because of a suffix deraisa or because of a suffix derabbanan. So we don't really want to cook in a klisheni. But there's one kind of food that we are completely 100% comfortable cooking in a klisheni, and that's tavlin. I have no qualms, I have no hesitations to cook spices in a klisheni. Why? Because the Mishnah says it's okay. The Mishnah says explicitly, we even saw this Mishnah, we actually go back to it. It's the first of the Maamar Kamos in the sheet, all the way back, way, way back, the beginning of the Sugya. The Mishnah says that ilpas v'gdei shavir musachin, if you have a pot of water or a pan of water, something that's still very hot, You shouldn't put spices, uncooked spices into it, because that's cooking in a clear isha. What you can do is empty the contents into a bowl and put the spices inside. So the Mishnah says, laugh on why you can put spices into a cliche, and you can't argue with that Mishnah. I would happen to Kali Abishal. It must be the Mishnah's assuming that spices are not Kali Abishal. I would happen to this that they're abundant of cooking in a cliche. So Tosu said, that doesn't apply to spices because the spices are not really Ika cooking. It's just thrown in for good taste. Nobody's going to mistake that for real cooking. So it doesn't give off that, but it's not cooking a chicken or an egg or something. So spices were never included in that as a derabbanan. So you can say whatever tigers you want about a cliche, but at the end of the day, the Mishnah says it's mutter. Mishnah says, it's mutter to take water from a klisha, empty it into a bowl, and put your spices inside. If that's the case, so now we have to ask ourselves a very, very real question. What is tea? Is tea a spice? Or is tea really like a food? Is tea closer to the spices that Chazal was describing? Or is tea like a raw egg? Is tea like a raw piece of chicken? Is tea like a raw potato? What exactly is the status of tea? So it's the Mishnah Berurah treated tea like any other raw food. Mishnah Berurah didn't even address the issue that maybe it's spices. Mishnah Berurah wasn't even thinking in terms that it's a regular raw food. And therefore the Mishnah Berurah very, very strongly says that one is not permitted to make tea, even in a cliche, you forget about Ira, even in a cliche, you know, not to make tea, says Mishnah Berurah. He says it's snacks of a shayla deraisa. Why is it such a shayla deraisa? Why? Because maybe it's Kalei Abishal. We don't really know it's Kalei Abishal. I don't know any more than the Rishonim. Everything is Safek Kalei Abishal. And therefore, under no circumstances, says Mishnah Berurah, should one permit making tea. Forget about a Klerishon, that's not the question. Forget about Ira, that's not the question. Even a Klisheni is not the question. Because of Sfekis and Kalei Abishal, the Rabbanans, etc. Mishnah Berurah was not assuming that there's any kudum whatsoever of tea concerning spices. That was the approach that Mishnah Berurah took. And Rav Moshe took the same approach, that we have to fundamentally be opposed to making tea in all shapes or forms, because it's sacred to Kalei Abishal. Rav Moshe had a following chiddush. Moshe said that the Mishnah says that you can't make tea in a cliche. The Mishnah says you can put spice in a cliche, but the din is you can't put other raw foods in a cliche, according to these chumras. Says Rav Moshe, but a cliche, everything goes. You could put raw food, Kalei Abishal, everything mutter to Klish Lishi. Why? Says Amashim, we don't have any precedent to say that Klish Lishi does any shape or form Bishal whatsoever. So this was the famous clue of Amashim I'm making here. Amashim said, what you should not do is don't put a tea bag into a pot of water. That's where people do that. Don't pour water onto a tea bag. Don't put a tea bag into a cup of hot water. But what you can do is take water from a tea kettle, pour it into a cup, then pour those contents into another cup. That's already a kli shlishi, and as a kli shlishi, then you're good to go. Then you can put your tea bag in, whatever you want to do, as long as it's kli shlishi, everything's okay. Now that idea is across the board green light, everything's okay in a kli shlishi, that's not clear in many, many poskim. The Mishnah Berurah does quote the idea of a kli shlishi in a different context, when he talks about, we spoke about the cooking bread that was already baked. But there, it's very possible that the ikra did we hold is not really a problem. Anyway, Mishnah Berurah does have a kul of klishlishi, but it's not clear whether that kul of klishlishi is across the board or not. But Rav Moshe was making a gamble. He said he can make tea, lechachim, and klishlishi has no problems. There are many people who follow the psak of Rav Moshe. And there are many others who question it, the Chazanish and others, who are of the opinion that we're not so sure klishlishi exists in halacha. The Rav suggested that Chazal never speak about a klishlishi because it doesn't exist. A klisheni means klisheni onwards. Whatever is not a klirishon is a klisheni and onwards. So klishlishi, if it's hot, it's still called a klisheni. Klisheni just means removed from being a klirishon. There is no independent category of klishlishi. Therefore, many people can argue, whatever you're not allowed to do in a klisheni, for whatever reason, you're not allowed to do the klishlishi and a klirvi and a kli 100 times over. So if you believe this is Kali Abishal, if you believe that this is the Rabbanon of Mexico of Ashur, then you can't do it even a klishlishi. So again, we had a clue from Moshe, and then you had others who questioned that clue. Then there's a third sheet. That's the biggest nekila in this whole shayla, and that was actually Reb Chaim. Chaim is not known for his kulas. Chaim Brisker was naked legamre to make tea in a klisheni. But the Mishnah Berurah says the shayla of the right is mutl chatchila. Why? For one simple equation, says Reb Chaim. Chaim said tea is tavlin. Tavla means something you put into something to give it some flavor. You're not eating the item itself. I'm not interested in eating pepper. I'm interested in eating my food and putting some pepper into it. So here, I'm not eating the tea bag. I want a cup of hot water. And it doesn't taste very good, a cup of hot water. So I throw a little bit of spices into it. The spice is called the tea bag. So it gives it a little bit of a kick. So comes Reb Chaim, and he said that a tea is a classic tavlin, and it's subject to all the leniencies, all the clues of tavlin, and therefore we can ignore any concerns of cliche, and even we can follow the Mishnah. No, so it's a car, so it's a Mishnah. Because Reb Chaim, you can make a cup of tea, as long as you do it there, cliche, you simply hang your hat on the Mishnah that says tavlin is butter. There was a humorous story, a famous story, that the Rav was apparently making tea once in the cliche, he followed the tradition of his grandfather, and somebody asked him, Rebbe, Mishabur says you don't want to do that, Rebbe, what's going on? So I heard two different versions of the story. They're basically the same response. One version was that the Rav responded back that my grandfather knew how to learn also. And the other response was my grandfather was Shomer Shabbos also. So yeah, I think it's the same basic response. Others question this retirement. Shom Zalman questioned this idea that tea is considered to be like spices. Shom Zalman said that spices of old were like the imagery of, when we think of spices, we can go into the store and buy a little box of McCormick spices or something, and you pour out a little hole. Spices of old were a big root of a cinnamon, a big root of ginger, so that was a spice. So Shom Zalman writes that the only reason why Chazal weren't concerned that spices are an issue of Kali Abishol is because there are these big, big fat things. Like the Gemara says that a big piece of meat is not Kali Abishol. So a big spice is not Kali Abishol. Says Rosh Hashanah, but if you have ground up cinnamon, ground up ginger, why is it not Kali Abishol? It's so easy to forget. It's more Kali Abishol than other things. It's so easily cooked. It's so small. So according to that, Svar Rosh Hashanah, a tea bag, the pieces of teeny, teeny little pieces of tea leaves inside. So ain't Kali Abishol won't be there. So you can't just say, well, it's spices. It's not, it's just spices and don't bother me. No. Spices, not halacha machine, spices. The spices that Chazal were referring to were pieces of big, big chunks of food, big, big chunks of spice that Taka weren't subject to Bishul in a cliche. So again, Yesh V'Yesh, so there are different opinions about this. Halacha Mais Hashem will make the tea on Shabbos. And I think that those who have a tradition from the Rav and they follow those Pesachim, and that's, rely on the Rav, the Chayim, and the Briskis, those want to rely on that. Those who don't have such a clear-cut tradition to make tea in that way, so some people follow Rav Moshe's eights of the Kli Shlishi, and others are concerned about that. Lefiyani is daiti, the safest thing to do is not to make tea at all on Shabbos. It's to have the tea prepared for before Shabbos with tea scents and different ways of mixing it in with Kli Shlishi, it's hot, it's cold, those are different eights. But to make tea with tchil on Shabbos using tea bags is fraught with questions. Yeah, I'm not saying that. I didn't say also, those who rely on the Chaim and the Rav, how much to rely on, those who rely on Ramesh, of course, how much to rely on, but I'm so comfortable with either one of these eights. Either one of the eights has a little bit of an issue to it. To make things even a little bit more hybridic, is that the Chaznish had another Chumra. He claimed that an urn is considered to be such a Kli Rishon that even when the water goes into the cup is still Kli Rishon. Classic Kli Rishon is you take it, it's on the fire, then you take it off the fire and you pour. The Chazish said that if you just tilt the pot while it's still on the fire, so anything that's coming out of that pot is still mechubah to the fire. So that's not a klisheni, that's still a Kli Rishon. So according to the Chazanish, any water that comes out of the urn is still Kli Rishon water because the urn is still on, it's still connected to the source of heating. Even if you have a tea kettle, take the kettle off the fire and pour it into an empty cup, that's klisheni. But just water coming out of an urn is still like the Kli Rishon. So again, we spoke about that a little bit in the past. Others disagree with that, but that's the whole shayla. So again, if you ask me, the safest way to make tea on Shabbos is to use some kind of a preparation, a sense from beforehand. Now, if that sense is going to be cold, some people like to leave the sense on the left side, some people leave it on the side of the counter. If it's going to get cold, so then you have to also be a little bit concerned with the age bishlach and bishlach of Allah, but then you get around pretty quickly. That type of klisheni works well. That way the Mishnah Berurah was made for klisheni works well. So I would say if you're preparing your tea sensor before Shabbos, if you want to just leave it on the counter, the table somewhere, so when you want to make yourself a cup of tea on Shabbos, pour water into a cup, make sure it's klisheni water, whether you want to use the standards of the urn and making the machmir standards and going another cup to make sure you have a klisheni, whatever you want in terms of that, make sure that the cup of water that you're putting it into is a klisheni. Then you can put the cold sensor that was cooked from before and into it. Ein bishlach habishal nigra din even other balach and klisheni that you can be making on. So again, those different models how to make tea, and so much of it emanates from the cities that we've been learning in terms of what is klivishim, not klivishim, iru, etc. So I think we can make a seam on the iru klivishim part of the sugya. Hopefully, it's Hashem the next year. So we'll try to we'll get the next time we come started. So that'll be it's Hashem on Friday like a regular schedule next week.